Here is That Which Is with John Roger. That Which is presented by MSIA, the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, a movement dedicated to awakening the spiritual heart within each of us. John Roger is the founder and spiritual advisor of MSIA, the founder and president of the Institute for Individual and World Peace, founder of the Heartfelt Foundation, and other organizations dedicated to improving people's lives. John Roger is a best-selling author, and he has been teaching and conducting seminars for many years. Right after John Roger speaks, we'll tell you how you can obtain more information about MSIA.
Certain habits produce adrenaline rushes with them. And the adrenaline rush gets to be addictive. Now, most everyone in this room has got this to some degree or another. Some will do it through anger. They get angry at almost everything and explode and yell. And that sets up the adrenaline rush in the body. And we get addicted to that feeling, much as we get addicted to drugs or alcohol. The feeling is a good feeling. And primarily, it's not a negative thing. The reason that it's considered negative is because it runs you rather than you run it. So now you have to look at a way of, if I can't stop it, which is going to be next to impossible, how do I direct it? How do I channel it into things that will assist me and others around me? This takes a type of managerial planning. And primarily it starts out with having a goal. Now, if you say, I don't have a goal, then you come back to who you are. If you can get a goal, and this is you back here, you're running. What's that other leg? And you can get a goal up here. Your goal starts to move towards you as an appearance. As you start to move towards it, that energy field meets. And the goal doesn't stay out here. It actually comes right here. And so we hear the comment, I got it sooner than I thought. It's because if it's a true goal, and it is ours, we are somehow connected to it. Sometimes by thought, sometimes by feeling. It's rare we're connected to it physically, or we would have it back here. And this is not a goal. This is just immediate results. It's called here and now. If you don't have a goal, and this is where it would be and it's not there, then you come back here to what it is that you want out of life. Maybe it's money, maybe it's peace, maybe it's health, maybe it's to be left alone. And there are a lot of goals that people have, and there are a lot of immediate goals, medium range, and long range goals. But there's a thing inside of here that if you are going towards this goal, and it's a good goal, but going towards it is unhappiness, because you don't feel you're getting the goal right now or sooner, then the goal itself, when you get it, is going to have unhappiness in it, because you're bringing it along with you. So when you get it, it'll be a disappointment. It won't be what you wanted or what you expected. So I tell people, that's a wrong way to get a goal. And they become surprised that I say that. But it's very simple. It's called a crazy method. Let's say that this is someplace you're going. But if you're happy now, and you start just moving in your life with happiness, and if you stop right here, you've had happiness all along. And it won't really matter if you get your goal immediately, because you're happy. When I was getting ready to fly out here to this area, I thought, gee, that's a long flight. We have to stop and change airplanes. Then they put us in a little airplane to fly us for another 4 hours. And it just was not a happy situation. I could have flown all the way to here where I would be happy, very distressed, very unhappy. Except I would be unhappy. And I like to fly. The weather was bad. The plane was bouncing around a lot. So what it didn't need was more unhappiness. It didn't need me to yell at the cabin attendants or go bawl out the pilot. What it needed was me to offset the negativity. And I couldn't offset it by going into it, because then I would have made them land the plane some way or another. Maybe I'd have threatened them with a bomb or a gun, or maybe just threatened to spit on them, or, you know, something. Whatever would work, that would set me up to another goal called I go to jail. Going to jail doesn't hurt. The feelings of unhappiness about it hurt. So inside's where we got to come to solve this. When the plane started bouncing around, I just looked around to see who was freaking out, so I could have something to do. No one was freaking out, so I considered that I would freak out, because I would have all the attention to myself. But then I would have nothing really to freak out about, because the plane smoothed out. So I just decided I would do nothing. So I relaxed and decided that whatever the plane did, I would be fine with that. I chose that. Immediately, the plane went into bad weather. So I just thought, this is like riding a horse. You don't know where you're going to come down. And as the plane bounced around, I just hung on. And it got kind of hilarious, because it wasn't like any horse I knew. Well, it smoothed out, and for the most part, we had a quiet trip. The key in there was what I chose. And I chose to take the happiness of coming to Miami and keep it with me all the way. When we got into Fort Lauderdale, which was a surprise, I thought I was going to Miami. But it was close enough that I settled for that. And when we got in, it was just a matter of reviewing the day very fast and I had a happy day. Except for one thing. When I went to get my car, a car rental, I pulled up and they had the car sitting there with the motor running and the trunk open. And it was dark. It was a big lot with lots of cars. But they had my car. So I felt good. And fortunately, the girl was there to help check me out. We closed the trunk. I got in the car and drove to the security gate. And out came a lady named Paula Balls. I know her name because I looked on her card. It was on her. She said, "Give me a contract." So I thought, all right. Gave it to her. She read the numbers. She said, "Open your door." So I opened the door. She looked at the numbers and said, "You have the wrong car." I kind of suspected that. Things were going downhill pretty fast. So I said, "All right." They gave me the wrong car. She said, "You can't take this out of here." I said, "I don't want to." She said, "You have to take it back." And I said, "Where would you like me to take it back to?" She said, "Wherever you got it." I said, "I don't remember where I got it." She said, "What?" I said, excuse me, I didn't know you were hard of hearing." And I got out of the car and I walked up to her and I said, "I don't remember where I got it." She said, "I can hear you." I said, "Okay." She said, "It was parked up there someplace along one of those rows of cars." She said, "Well, didn't you see it when you went up to it?" I thought, this lady wants a fight. Okay. She looks like she's ready for it. And I said, "No. When the fellow brought me in, I was sitting facing the middle of the van. And when we stopped, he told me, 'That's your car outside.' And the lady was there. So I didn't have to know where my car was because they took me to it. I'm one of their preferred customers, if that means anything to you." She said, "It doesn't." So, okay, I thought, this is challenge time. So I said, "How about if I just take this car and take it right up to that building and park it there?" And she said, "Suit yourself." So I thought, well, I've got an authority here that tells me to suit myself. She said, "If you think they're going to come down here and get it, you're crazy." I said, "And you're nasty and rude." Got in the car and took it back up, right where a policeman was that said absolutely no parking, and just parked it right in front of his car. Got out and walked inside, and I knew I would get help pretty soon. Because a policeman couldn't go unless we moved my car. Was I on the edge of warfare? Sure. Yeah, it was brinkmanship. Walked inside, and I said, "Hey, that lady up there won't let me take this car out that you signed for me." And I said loud like this to a small room, and they all turned around. I said, "What the hell am I supposed to do about this?" And the lady that checked me out came running over real fast and said, "Sir, I'll help you." And I said, "Great." We went out. She looked at the contract, changed the numbers on it so they matched what was on the car. She said, "That ought to do it." I said, "Are you dyslexic?" She said, "Yes." I said, "Watch your number writing down. You get them wrong. That's a good thing you got a nice guy like me to practice on." went back down to the gate. The girl, I pulled up. She's almost like a Gestazi madam, if you understand the idea. I said, pulled up, rolled down the window. She said, "Give me your contract." I said, "No." "May I please see the contract?" She said, "May I please see the contract?" I said, "Sure." Hand it to her. She said, "Open the door." And I looked at her. She's a little closer. I said, "Okay." And grabbed the door and just opened it. And it just smacked her really kind of hard. I said, "Oh, geez. I thought you knew better than to stand that close to a car when the door's opening. How long have you been doing this?" "So long enough." Okay, she didn't need any of my help. Read the numbers. Put it back. She says, "It's fine." I said, "Well, thank you." She said, "Ball. Paula Ball. Remember the name." I said, "You're just a real nasty, rude lady." She says, "Well, I don't work for them, so what are you going to do about it?" I said, "Well, I think I'll just write to whoever you work for." She said, "Well, do that." So I did. The letter was sent to him already. Now, I got in the car and took off, and I was happy. Because I was happy to get here. I was happy to do what I did. There were a lot of unhappy things on top, but I made sure the happy underneath stayed there. Because if I drove away from there upset at her, then I bought her upsetness and made that mine. Now I'm not going to have fun with anybody. I'm just going to be upset. Those are choice levels. I didn't want to win anything. I just came to get the car. I didn't care about the airplane. I just went to fly on it. What I was concerned about was how I am. Now, in that description, you heard me go through a lot of different things. But underneath, I made sure that I was happy no matter what, this one here. Then, no matter what comes in, you still get to remain happy. Happy is also synonymous to me of peaceful, because I'm not happy going, "Oh, I'm happy, I'm happy, I'm happy." They may not know I'm happy because I could be sitting down, very quiet, almost asleep. It's very peaceful. It's calm. It's tranquil. In that place, I can't really be disturbed. People can work to disturb me. But the only way they can disturb me is for me to come out of that place up to where they're disturbed, which means I got to get disturbed, and yell back at them to let them know I'm with them. And sometimes I'll do that, and sometimes I won't. But the key issue is I'm free to move off it. I'm free to move up to it. I'm free to move off it. But you don't have that freedom unless you're willing to be congenial, to be acceptable, to be receptive. It has nothing at all to do with flying or driving or anything else. It has to do only with me inside. The only thing I have control of in this room is what's underneath my skin. And I don't have control over everything there because some of it's automatic. God has control of that. But I have control over how I care to present it to me. Listen carefully. I have control over how I want to present my emotions to me, because I can present them angrily, mean, nice, quiet. I present them. They don't present themselves unless I've got a bad habit of just exploding. And then they present themselves to me in an explosive quality. That isn't something that comes easily, because you have to come into those qualities where you're more apt to explode and not. The way you do that is the same way you play the piano at Carnegie Hall. Before you ever get there, you play many recitals. You practice the piano often. And so when you get there, everything is flowing automatically. It's being well prepared. Few of us would think to do that to our life here the same way we might practicing to play at Carnegie Hall. But we're playing the instrument of our humanity every day, where we may play at Carnegie Hall once, and then we may never practice again. In the human body, we have to practice continually. I don't know if you people have known, but have you ever noticed it just doesn't let up? It shifts, but it doesn't let up. Even in the moment when you're peaceful and you're quiet and you're calm, which means you've come to your center, and you're very okay with that, a baby's crying, a horn is honking, the TV's too loud, somebody wants something, the phone is ringing, you get hungry, you have to go to the toilet, your nose starts running, some place of you itches. There's always seems to be something. Sometimes it's big, sometimes it's small. This is, I'm writing, spelling the word control. This is the biggest negative factor dealing with all of us on the planet, all 5 billion of us. And it's called who's in control, or who's, why are you trying to run me? That's called why are you in control? As long as we're in control, and this is an extremely important thing to remember, the most gigantic one you'll ever hear out of me here. If our control is threatened, we will die for it. This is why we have localized fighting all over the world. This is why one town in Florida may fight against another town in Florida. Who's in control? Control is the master addiction. Of all the addictions we have, control is the master. If we give up control, as miserable as we are, as terrible as it may seem, as poverty-stricken as we are, we may get something worse because we won't be in control. We've looked at fighting in Herzegovina and Bosnia and Sarajevo, and I've heard many people say, why do they stay there? Why don't those people move? Well, some of them have been trying to get them to move. And when they don't move, they kill them. So they move them anyway. If you're a Muslim and you're over in Croatia, you might as well shoot yourself, because the others are going to. But at least they're going to have to do it over your dead body. Do you understand the control statement? I will die for this is the ultimate control statement. It's very difficult to live with a controlling person. And so we get divorced. Now, if you get one whose control level is at 90, let's say that this person is at 90%, and they marry the second person who's at 40%, they will get along fine. Because this one's the boss, and this one knows it. This one says, I control my household. And this one says, that's right, except 10% of the time, I'm sleeping with another person, and you don't know it. Because they're not going to let you control their life. They will let you control this part that you think you're in control of. As long as this is a man and this is a woman, as long as you're bringing in food, money, protection, clothing, you can control. But if you don't control everything, like sexually gratify me, well, I just go out here and find somebody else for a while. Will I tell you? No, because you're in control, you'll kill me. I'll never tell you. It's called the secret. What does this person do with their 10% that they got left, which equals 100? They also have somebody else out there. Because I didn't get 100% over you, I'll take the 100%, the rest of it, and go give it to somebody else. I'll show you, I'll get even. And we're looking at the dynamic of why people do this to each other. Now, this could be a female or a male, or this one could be a female or a male. Doesn't matter. This pattern works regardless of our sex and our sexuality and our color or anything else or how rich or poor. Beirut Be'Shem.
John Rogers' closing words were Beirut Be'Shem, which means the blessings already are. The blessings, the ideas, and the concepts which you've heard are just a small part of the abundance of material John Roger has shared with us over the years. If you would like a free book by John Roger, Journey of a Soul, call this number, 1-800-899-2665. You can send email to servicedesk@msia.org or write to That Which Is, Post Office Box 513-935, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90051-1935. This has been That Which Is with John Roger. Thanks for joining us.
We're doing intercessory work between the negativity and mankind. And we're praying, and people are saying, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. They're not just praying for this city, but some are. Their vision is too short. They got to pray for the Jerusalem in all of us. Beirut Be'Shem.